if all I'm after ever doing is seeking comfort, and then I'm essentially seeking what I know. And if I'm always seeking what I already know, then I'm not growing much at all. And so I think comfort, you have to allow yourself to embrace discomfort in order to embrace the unknown. And the unknown is where all of the growth happens, is where all the ideas happen, is where all of the challenge happens. Yes, but it's also where all of the experiential learning happens. And that's where you grow in capacity and compassion and wisdom and all of those things. So yeah, screw comfort.
Hi, everyone. This is Joshua Hoffman and Alex Garashenko, and welcome to another episode of the Masters in Marketing Agency podcast, where we deconstruct the why and how agency owners found their success, and in season three, discuss how to build a community and referral network. Today, I have Teresa Bassett, the CEO of The Diamond Group, a digital marketing and web design agency building marketing strategies that guarantee double-digit growth. Welcome, Teresa.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here. I appreciate you guys.
In the new office, and good thing we are we got the video.
In the new office, yes, and all of its somewhat unfurnished glory.
You can only see what's behind you, and it
can
looks
only tell you exactly.
Looks no.
We've come a long ways in a week and a half, so nothing to hide there. Yeah,
and I guess with the new opening, we were just talking right before we hit record that you got the office some Chick-fil-A today, breakfast as well. So hell, a good start. To the day and hopefully
exactly. It was like surprise biscuit day. Who knows? You know, you never know what you're going to get around here.
I would have had to break my fast for that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I actually, you know, the other piece of that was I stocked the office with an Easter basket with candy in it. And I thought, no problem, this will last all week, right? It was abundant. And I put that in the office Monday morning. I went over there yesterday and all that was left in the basket was the grass.
So that means there was Reese's, Snickers, and maybe like Twizzlers.
Oh yeah, but Butterfingers, mini Butterfingers, and Sour Patch bunnies.
I love Sour Patch. So I want to jump right into the early days of the agency, because the last time we spoke, you mentioned actually pivoting several times. So can you explain how the agency started, how you got involved, and kind of what's changed since then?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, pivoting is the name of the game, right? Adapt or die. We started the agency in 1995. My husband actually started it coming out of the radio industry. So our first name out the gate was Crash Productions, Crash with a K. Literally because at the radio station he worked for as a producer, he backed his pickup truck into a wall pulling into the parking lot one day or pulling out of the parking lot. And so he got the radio name Crash Bassett, and that stuck with him. And so when he flew out of radio into his own agency format, he brought the name Crash with him. And so we really did radio imaging, radio ads for the first several years. And then TV ads, video production came down the pipe a bit later. He moved the agency across the country from San Francisco to Denver, New York City. And then to Raleigh, where I met him 14 years ago. And of course, digital was just kind of coming on. So when I first came on board, I was the third employee. He had just recently lost his partner in business. And I could tell that he would benefit from having another partner. My background was Fortune 500 sales and marketing. And I was also an entrepreneur. And I thought, well, heck, you know, here I finally found the love of my life, 40 years old or so. And I don't want to spend another minute building a business over here. If I'm going to be working 60, 70 hours a week and you're going to be working 60, 70 hours a week, then I sure as heck would rather just be by your side. And so that's what we did. And at that point, of course, I just started selling video to everyone. That was the first thing I did. Of course, you need a video, don't you, Alex? And you need a video, don't you? but I realized that there was just a lot more that clients needed. And when I started to dive into those conversations, you know, the business had really been built on word of mouth and referrals up to that point. So there really hadn't been any outbound or inbound sales efforts per se. And so, in the course of those conversations, I just got in touch with what people were really telling me they needed, which was a whole lot of everything.
Well, first I want to share that I also had a friend in high school that I'm pretty sure he had his license at the time. He drove through the gyms. It was brick. And he drove right through and we all showed up to school on Monday, and there's this huge hole in the school.
Did they call him Crash too?
I kind of want to say his name on the podcast, just because like if this ever goes down to the internet world and you search for like Michael Patchen, then
there you go.
Did you implement anything specific when you came in, and how fast did it take to see any kind of change?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, the first thing that I saw, I guess, was a very informal system around quoting work. And so when clients would reach out and say, hey, can you do this spot for me? It was literally the matter of an email back that says, sure, I can do a 2-minute spot. And this is, this is it. And I was like, seriously, this is the quote? Like, no. This is definitely going to get some more structure around that. So I think I just started to put some systems in place for an actual process for intaking new work, documenting that work, having good client expectations set. I think the next piece was a lot of it was project work. We had one regular recurring client. And so it felt very unstable. It felt like you were recreating the business month after month. And for me, that was like, whoop, whoop, red flag. I immediately said, okay, my first goal is 50% MRR. And he was like, MRR, what's that? And I said, monthly recurring revenue. And you're never going to forget it. And so then that kind of set me down a path in conjunction with these conversations of like, how can I structure something that both A, serves the clients better with more of what they need? Because not everybody needs 2 or 3 videos a month. At that point, social was just heating up. We didn't even know about clips. That was just becoming a thing. And so on the path to recurring revenue and, the cataclysm of these conversations around just really needing a plan and needing much more involved in terms of execution in the execution of that plan, that was my first step towards MRR. It's like, okay, we need a whole new setup here. So that we can get out of survival mode.
Well, I want to double click on that too, because I think that's really interesting. And I think, almost, I shouldn't say all, but like a lot of marketing agencies do the same thing, especially if they start into consulting and they start with their single project and then they add a few more projects. But like you said, they're kind of reinventing the company every single month. And I think most marketing agencies then want to move into some kind of MRR. I would say, assume every business wants to move into some kind of MRR if right. It makes sense. So how did you specifically push the company towards getting, call like MRR clients, I guess?
Yeah. Well, I had to figure out what people needed that was recurring, first of all, right? Like, okay, what can I sell them that they need over and over and over? And so that's where I started really, entertaining the idea of something more than video, something more than TV ads and radio ads, because a lot of times once those 30-second or 60-second spots are done, those are the same ads you're using for a little while, right? And even though we were serving some large automotive clients and that those were coming through the other agency, that was our one recurring source of regular business. We didn't much love the automotive industry. Like it wasn't our, like, we didn't love the fire drill environment around that as much. And so, so we weren't married to that. So I think that was the first thing I had to ask myself is like, well, what do they need on an ongoing basis? And then how could I create a package around that? And so it was a pretty slippery slope into a full service agency in fairly short order because that's what they needed. And then that just came with a whole lot of dumb tax because I didn't know what the heck that meant because I'd never run an agency before, let alone a full service agency. So it was all new to me. And really at that point, the full service aspect of it, digital being a thing, that was all new to Kelly as well. So we were two, agency neophytes wandering in the forest, figuring it out.
And I'm definitely going to get back to the dumb tax in a second. I want to kind of close out this topic because I'm very interested. And I think there's a lot of help that the listener, especially if you're trying to start a marketing agency, can kind of pull from this. Were you, and you kind of started getting into this, but were you concerned about going off thesis to chase MRR, or was it just, it didn't matter?
Oh, yeah.
It was so important.
Oh, absolutely. Because, you know, my husband was very used to being an expert in his industry. He had been an expert for, you know, well, 15 years plus at that point. And so it was like, how can I sell something that I haven't been doing for a decade, right? Like, how do I know how to do that? And so that's where the personal development or professional development comes in. It's like, well, let's start by saying yes, because that's what they need. And then let's figure it out. Let's fail forward fast. And let's do our very best to execute on that. Because right now, the fact of the matter is they don't know who to turn to and they don't have another source. And so we are the ones in front of them having this conversation. We are positioned to help. And so what if we just said yes and figured it out?
That's amazing. And it's a lot of companies start with, I do something well, so now I'm going to offer it and make money from it. Very few companies think about, what's the long-term success of this company going to look like? Oh, we need MRR to get that. What do we need for MRR? Oh, we don't currently do that. So how did you then go about, who then provided that service? How did you get that started?
Yeah, well, I think the grounding and all of that goes back to the key question, which is, the first question really wasn't, what do we need? The MRR was the answer to that question. But the first question was, what does the client really need? What is good for the client? What does the client really need? And so even if they were producing a TV ad, it's like, okay, well, are you, you know, then you can start asking, well, are you using any of those, you know, any portion of that in social? What is that? What do you mean? Right. So I think that the most important grounding question is, what does the client really need? And because that has been the guiding question that has continued to flavor every single pivot or evolution in our systems, hands down from day one. And I think that just makes us better and better at what we do. And, you know, now we're called the Diamond Group because diamonds are created under pressure, like leaders and small businesses. And, you know, that marketplace pressure makes you evolve, but it also makes you incredibly strong and resilient if you survive.
Mm-hmm. When you identify a new service like that, like you identified with social media, and Kelly's no longer the one providing that, those services, how do you get that started?
Yeah. How did I get that started? I started to recognize that there were all kinds of talent sets all around me. And so even though my husband was a great audio and video producer, that we could link arms with people that were good at other specialties. And so maybe we weren't the web dev people, but there was an agency right down the street that was looking for business and could collaborate with us. And so I just started having a lot of conversations about what I wanted to start creating for clients and then looking for the people that could help me provide that. And that in conjunction with just meeting a lot of people and saying, okay, what are you good at? Oh yeah, well, we're going to need media planning. Why don't you hang around for a little while? Let's figure out how to sell some media planning, right? So it was just both of those things happening at the same time. I've just been really blessed to magnetize myself to really good people over and over and over. So whether those be people that became freelancers or partners or alliances or employees, you know, probably my Achilles heel is hiring for growth, but it's also my strength. You know, sometimes that leads to an overhead, you know, heavy situation, but I just have a way of finding really good people all the time, around.
That's a really important skill set to have. And one that I think it doesn't get talked about a lot. And a lot of companies are potentially shy to talk about it, the partnerships that they have. But at the end of the day, if you're trying to do right by the client, they want one person that's accountable for the entire project instead of having 10 people to try to go through to figure out why am I having this issue.
Amen. Yeah. Yeah. And that single feature, in addition to needing a plan and then needing a single point of contact to execute on the plan, leads to a full service agency model where you are the client relationship handholder, and you are accountable ultimately for the quality and for the results. And then it behooves you to find the best talent to help create the deliverables.
Absolutely.
Right. And so, yeah, we've learned so much, you know, on the journey, and we've just had to keep learning. Pivot, learn.
I have a few weird questions at the end, and you kind of already answered. It's probably our biggest one. It's, you know, like, and I'm going to repeat this at the end, but, you know, if one of your customers says, can you do this, and something you can't do, how do you typically handle that request? And maybe I'll just rinse and repeat that. You'll rinse and repeat that answer. But it's kind of, again, what we're trying to do with this whole community is, you know, I've mentioned this before, but we had so many guests on the show, and we're learning, we already knew this, but we're learning even more that marketing agencies typically need help because they don't cover that service, or maybe they're not as well versed in that service. So where are the partners that they can hire and that they can trust? So again, you know, what we're trying to do with this whole community or our guests is saying, you know, you can first, we have this whole list of people that might be able to help you. You can either listen to their podcast to see who they are. We're building web pages and everything like that. So I'm really glad that you kind of focused on that and allowed me to get the opportunity to talk community and everything. So
no, it's so important. I think you're spot on. I mean, I think if you have a blue ocean mindset, which is we're in a collaborative, abundant, marketing rich environment in general. There's plenty of work out there. We don't have to compete for single accounts, and which means that we can link arms and we can allow each other's complementary skill sets to really serve the client holistically on a better level. That being said, I guess when somebody asks you that question, I guess if it's something that's way outside your wheelhouse, like, you know, we serve small business. SMB is kind of our sweet spot. And we determined a while back, we were doing government work, you know, airports, universities, bigger municipal projects. And we decided that really wasn't our playing field. And so we swam back downfield to, you know, SMB space. And we just have a heart of service for the smaller business owner and their teams. And so if somebody comes to me with a large project that's outside of my realm, that's where I would lean into a project, right? But if somebody comes to me with a project, maybe deliverable wise, that's a close cousin to something that we do all the time. Like they're like, well, I you know, I'm ready to be a Shopify Plus partner and I do Shopify, but maybe up only to a certain point, then that might be where you start stretching your growing edge a little bit because it's so close to what you do. And because ultimately, like you said, the relationship actually trumps the results. And so if you pass off the relationship too fast to another agency, you can't really be assured that they have the same concept of service that you do to those clients, then you lose control of the relationship. Then it's harder.
That's exactly the type of answer we're trying to like get out of that. So that was because again, we want to share that clip that you just said with another agency that's looking for something that you have, or vice versa. So that was perfect. Dumb tax. What is that?
Not knowing what you don't know and paying the price for it, right? Sometimes not even knowing what questions to ask because you don't even know enough to ask the questions. Mm-hmm. And then paying the price for that. I mean, I've probably had the most expensive real world MBA, you know, two or three times over that I can imagine. I've paid massive dumb tax for just not knowing what I didn't know. But I mean, I learned by experience, and that experiential learning is absolutely, you know, three times, four times, 300 times more valuable than sitting in a classroom or reading it from a textbook or watching a webinar. Right. So that's
hopefully why I won't have to get an MBA and tried to start a few companies, got one sold and all that kind of stuff. I'm like, please let this like replace the MBA. I don't like school.
I think it does, you know, and it's not that there aren't wonderful things to glean from an MBA. I'm sure I would learn a ton, But I've also learned so much just by being in the field and asking these kinds of questions and having these kinds of relationships and making mistakes. And then saying, what went well? What could have gone better? And then just next time doing it a little bit better.
Do you have a quick example on dumb tax that you paid and don't, you know, then gain the knowledge that you don't have to now?
Yeah. Boy, there's so many examples. I mean, you know, in terms of full service agency models right there, you know, I didn't come from an agency background and Kelly didn't come from an agency background. So when we say, okay, we're going to be a full service agency, like we literally had no idea what the structure was. And to be honest, we didn't even slow down to Google it. Like, we probably could have at that point just Googled agency structure and it would have said, this is an account manager and this is what an account manager does. But we didn't do that. We were that dumb. We just held the hand of the client and said, what do you need? And then we've used our common sense to figure out what we thought that looked like. And so we didn't have a proprietary system for many, many years. A way of doing things, right, that really served us. We do now. Game changer. And because we didn't have a system, we didn't have roles defined to help us make that system work, right? It was like I was, again, having individual conversations of like, okay, Susie, what do you do really well? Okay, Susie, I really like you. Now I'll figure out, Susie, how to fit you into like helping you serve, you know, helping us serve the clients. But there wasn't, because there was no structure around the system, there was no structure around the roles to help the system work. And so that didn't even dawn on me when I started.
That's really interesting. I am
massively dumb.
I think so. Some of it, brilliant. Actually,
I'm not sure.
I think some of it may be brilliance. One of my friends had brought this up to me. We were working on some kind of process, and it wasn't for a business. And he said, "You know what? Instead of," I was like, "Let's go to Google and let's figure out how other companies have done it, and then we'll see what we like, and then we'll adopt theirs." And he was emphatic on no. Let's write our own, and you and I can creatively think freely about what we think the best process is. And then once we have that process, let's go match it up with the ones that exist. But at least we're not being influenced by other processes first. Love that concept. And I do, all of our internal processes have been built that way. We take our internal processes and we look at other ones and we're like, okay, maybe we like these pieces from it.
Right.
Where do they fit?
And we're doing that now in hindsight because we did it the other way first, like you did. And I do think, like you said, I think that there was something smart about that because we didn't get stuck in the agency rut. If we had just taken the way all other agencies, you know, do it, then we wouldn't have cross-pollinated from the various industries that I had come from or touched, you know, right? And so, you know, that speaks to, you know, Elon Musk, when he started Tesla, he went out and hired engineers that were not from the automotive industry, specifically
not secret sauce.
Same concept, right? Let's cross-pollinate with ideas and innovation that helps make the systems even better because we're thinking outside the industry box. And so I think to your point, I think that our system Momentum has benefited greatly from cross-pollination and innovation from outside our industry, 100%. But I can see that now in hindsight.
Yeah, and we actually are, I think it was the last episode that we actually talked about this where he doesn't like to read books and he does it because he wants like this original thinking. And then maybe he'll tie it. I think I've told this before, but I always knew I was going to like philosophy, but I'd rather have my own thoughts first. And then I realized all my thoughts were stoicism. So kind of cool to back in that way. And I think this loosely ties to the next topic, which is there's a blog post about getting comfortable being uncomfortable. And I think that kind of loosely ties to what you were just saying. And there was a quote in there that says, all the best stuff happens at the end of your comfort zone. And again, I think that kind of ties to what we were just talking about. And my understanding is, actually, you kind of already mentioned this, but my understanding is that you named the agency based kind of on this concept. So can you kind of talk a little bit more? You already mentioned why you named the agency, but can you talk about a little bit more about, you know, getting uncomfortable being uncomfortable?
Yeah, I think, and as I progress, you know, I think maybe, you know, you do get wiser as you get older. And, you know, now in my 50s, I realize that comfort is grossly overrated. I think it keeps you small and it ages you quickly. Like if all I'm ever doing is seeking comfort, and then I'm essentially seeking what I know. And if I'm always seeking what I already know, then I'm not growing much at all. And so I think comfort, you have to allow yourself to embrace discomfort in order to embrace the unknown. And the unknown is where all of the growth happens, is where all the ideas happen, is where all of the challenge happens. Yes, but it's also where all of the experiential learning happens. And that's where you grow in capacity and compassion and wisdom and all of those things. So, yeah, screw comfort.
I was actually listening.
I mean, other than Chick-fil-A, of course. We allow that level of comfort.
Well, I even told you before this that I always get Chick-fil-A after doing something that's wildly uncomfortable.
Wildly uncomfortable. That's like your Linus blanket reward at the end of your.
And the other thing, and again, I might have shared this before too, but a few weeks ago, I was listening to Huberman interview David Goggins, and that dude is the king of doing things that are uncomfortable. And he actually said he'll bring in like the biology, chemistry, or you know, neurology behind something behind that. And this is actually a very new study. I'm going to butcher this, so I don't want to spend like too much time on this because I'm probably half wrong with this. But that life expectancy is actually, they found it in the brain, is actually tied to people that do things that they don't want to do. So Even if you're working out and you don't want to do it the first three times, but then you actually fall in love with working out, you actually lose it. It's things that you don't want to do.
Interesting. Them,
it is actually tied with the people that live the longest.
Yeah.
So that was
wonder how that ties into habits. That's interesting.
Yeah, exactly. Well, see, once it becomes a habit and you don't mind it anymore, you actually lose that.
You no longer think about it. Once it's a habit, you're on autopilot and you're not really creating any, you're not accessing memories or really like any brain power to make decisions. You're just going. Yeah.
So although the habit might be positive on the mm-hmm. grand scheme of
your life, the other thing is you're not using adrenaline. You don't have to, you know, your cortisol levels don't spike. It's a different biochemical response. So your hormones involved in getting it done are also different once you know and you're comfortable doing it.
So it's almost like you have to like increase the RPMs in order to.
Yeah.
There's so Josh and I go driving sometimes, and one of my buddies told me that in my car, I actually, as soon as it's warmed up, I have to drive it hard. He's like, your engine actually needs it, because if you don't, there'll be bore scoring that will happen in your engine. And in order to avoid that, you have to, when you're driving it, drive it above 4,000 RPMs, which for us, that's great.
So even your engine gets bored. Yeah.
There you go.
It needs a little more juice. Yeah. Yeah. It makes so much sense. That's really fascinating. But yeah, I can tell that, like, even when I'm out running, you know, pushing past a certain point where you want to run into the, you don't want to do it. I feel like it's really good for me. I can tell it's really good for me. Doesn't make me want to do it more, but I can tell it's good for me.
That's actually a note that I had. I was going to bring it up and I was like, all right, we can move on. But that's totally like saunas and running and a lot of conditioning things. You get to that point where your brain says stop and you probably got a full workout in. I love going past that point. And then you just say, okay, next time I say stop. All right, well, you know, next time I say stop. And then I ended up in the hospital one time. But so you
don't want to do that.
Yeah, go too far. But going back to the habit stuff, there's another blog that was titled "The Number One Thing You Can Do If You Want New Better Habits." And a quote from there is, "Focusing on behavior is focusing on the symptoms, whereas if you focus on the identity that your behavior Whereas if you focus on the identity, then your behaviors become more natural and they stick." And that's kind of what we were just talking about. So is there anything more that you can kind of elaborate on that?
Yeah. That's the other one. I think that, you know, the longer I go on this journey, the more and more it comes back to that. And I, And I used to be just a solid like behavior, you know, try and modify my behavior by writing lists of what I wanted to do better or what was coming up next, or just targets and goals from a standpoint of behavior modification. And I've completely changed my approach to it based on this statement, because I've taken the approach of, yes, maybe I can start with that list of what do I want to do better? What do I want to do more? What do I want to try? But then how is that tied to something about who I say I am for myself, like my identity? Who am I? What do I stand for? Maybe as a woman, as a person, as an agency owner, as a mother, how are those behaviors tied to that identity? And is there something that's askew or out of alignment? Is this all aspirational? Maybe it's something in my identity that I aspire to that I haven't even claimed for myself, but I'm historically bad at not acknowledging what I already am. Like I'm historically quoted as saying I'm not a runner, and yet I've run 2 full marathons and 8 half marathons. And I'll regularly tell people I'm not a runner. But the reality of it is I am a runner. And so as a runner in my identity, the behavior that comes with it is running more. That's what runners do. They run. Imagine that.
Well, I guess I'm a runner. And anytime I'm trying to like convince people to run or something, they're like, oh yeah, but I'm bad at running. I'm like, we're all bad at running. Like no one, unless you're like doing like races and winning them, yeah, as good at running. But you know what I thought of when you were saying that is a lot of times it's actually easier to convince yourself to make a change and like, you know, do say hard things in your head or whatever it is, you know, like, oh, you should be doing this. But sometimes when you try to, I don't want to say push, because that's totally the wrong word here, but push that on others, the messaging that you use internally just doesn't get shared properly with other people. So I guess the question that I'm trying to ask here is, you know, do you try to, again, I don't know a better word than push, but like push your employees to also become better people and better habits and things like that? And if so, like, how do you do that?
Yeah, that's a great question. Did we practice this question? I don't remember that question, but that's a great question.
No, that's a new one.
Yeah, and very timely, actually. I actually just finished writing a book called Up Level, Sprinting Your Way to Success in Your Life and Your Business. And I push my employees the way I push myself now, or encourage rather than push.
Thank you.
Yeah, by building and working towards things progressively in sprints. And those sprints last 90 days. And I do one in the spring and one in the fall. And I encourage people to personalize this methodology for them, but I don't do well with the 24/7, 365 treadmill. I need stops and starts. Like I have mastered the art of the start, but the art of maintaining shit, I'm very bad at maintaining. Like I don't like slogging. I need to stop and then restart. And it can be the very same activity, but it just fires up something different in my brain. It helps me reset and refocus to the next level differently. And so I get excited. I get enthusiastic. I do not get enthusiastic about maintaining. If you're like, maintain this system for me for the next 90 days, I'd be like, yeah, somebody else can do that.
That's really interesting.
Yeah. I think that's like my favorite thing I've ever heard on this. I would say why on a personal level. That was very personal to me because I have this whole theory that I'm sure I've mentioned before of like what makes a successful person. And to me, I think it's a combination and they all kind of work together of self-awareness, motivation, and discipline. And I do this really unfair thing where I'll start to like, you know, I'm like, oh, let me test this theory. Let me look at someone and like a friend. I know this is so bad. Be like, okay, where do I rank them in self-awareness? Are they a plus, minus, or neutral? Same thing with motivation, same thing with discipline. And I think where my biggest weakness is discipline. I like to think that I'm self-aware. I think everyone does. I spend time focusing on motivation and really like capturing that and making sure I'm taking advantage of it when I call it like the first half-life of your motivator. Yeah. Is where you can kind of really capture that. But what I think I struggle the most with is creating that discipline after I get the motivator. And I don't really have anywhere that I'm going with this other than I love the idea of doing a discipline sprint. That's kind of what
I would bet you that I would bet if you look back at some of the things that you've started and maybe feel like you're undisciplined about maintaining, they're probably in the same genre, the same category year after year, year after year. Like,
oh, totally.
Right. And so you're practicing long obedience in the same direction, but you just need a different rhythm to being, to being optimally productive. That is me 100%. So I was doing these sprints without really realizing it.
Oh,
and then I was subsequently sometimes beating up myself up for not being disciplined enough, not being persistent enough. And then I'm like, holy crap, actually, no, that's not true, because I'm doing the same things, that I'm working on some of the same things year after year, year after year. I'm publishing books. I'm in the business. I'm in the business. I am consistent. I am persistent, but I just need stops and starts to things.
And what I really love about
amazing.
That, yeah, yeah. And what I really love about that is, I think what ends up happening and the byproduct of all of that is you end up leveling up without realizing it, right? Like you,
100%.
Raising the baseline.
I keep raising the baseline. I was just talking about this in my Jumpstart Challenge. I did a 5-day virtual, a free event called the Jumpstart, which was at the front end of the spring sprint, because we were 1 week into the spring sprint. And I was talking about how subsequently every sprint I'm raising the floor and I'm also taking the limit off the ceiling. So every time I am up leveling, many times in the same genre or category, but I'm setting a very specific target and then setting a, you know, using a set of tactics that I choose. It's very mindful and conscious, and it's compressed. And then oftentimes I'll anchor it to an external commitment, which then pulls me towards it. So if one of my targets is physical and one of my targets is financial and one is other, then let's say the physical target, what can I anchor that commitment with? Maybe it is signing up for the next event. Now that anchor event at the end of the sprint or somewhere during the sprint becomes a pulling mechanism as opposed to me pushing towards it. It's pulling me towards it. I have to get ready for this event because it's on my calendar.
Okay, well, you got me. I'm going to dive in further into this.
And I think, Josh, I think your three things that you look for, self-awareness, motivation, and discipline, it ties so well with what you're talking about, Teresa, because I think the self-awareness piece is maybe, you know, you can't do it perpetually. You need to start and stop.
I the used motivation to beat is, myself up for that continuously.
Yeah. And just having the self-awareness.
Say, oh, you just need to be more persistent. You need to be more, what do they say? Consistent. And I would accept that. And then I stepped back from that. And I'm like, no. I am consistent. I'm just consistent in my own way.
Yeah. And it helps build up the motivation too. Cause when spring is starting and you're getting ready for your 90-day sprint, you're getting motivated towards it. And you know that there's a finite ending to it.
Yes.
So the discipline to pursue it, you're going to have the, the willpower. Cause it's proven willpower is like a muscle and it's going to get drained. And especially if there's no end in sight.
Yeah,
then you may quit a lot earlier. You know where the finish line is, right? You're going to push past it.
Exactly. And it actually kind of like we were talking about with the agency, like, well, how did you have the gumption to pivot in the model? It came from those questions we were talking about, like, what is good for the client? This system came from me asking, what is good for me? What is good for me? And I said, well, wait a minute. I'm the chief merrymaker in my house. Christmas is a big deal. Like, I'm wrapping presents, buying presents. I'm hospitality queen. Like, I'm cooking. I'm shopping. Like, I am full bore December. Like, you know, and I need a break mentally from the sprint.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man. My heart is so full with this conversation. I was about to say something. I was like, and then Alex, like, oh, you know, that was awesome. I love that. Okay. Then the last thing I wanted, I know we're kind of coming up in time. Do we have like a hard stop at the top of the hour?
No, I do have a hard stop by about 10 after four.
That's totally fine. Okay. Then we'll try to keep this a little short than the response. That's how I see it. You know, to repeat a lot of what you guys are saying is you need to bring self-awareness towards the issue. You need to believe in yourself, and then what is the motivator that is not just changing it, or is changing it from self-awareness to, you know, a motivator. And then what happens in my mind is then you have to turn that motivator into a discipline. And I kind of think, you know what, before I share my thoughts, how do you think that you're supposed to turn a motivator into a discipline?
Well, immediately my mind turned your word discipline into a system.
Okay,
if I'm self-aware and I'm locating the motivator, how could I turn that into a system so that I don't have to drain that discipline battery at all? What if it's just my system?
So how? I think you're 100% right.
Yeah. Well, so I think it starts with, what are the recurring patterns? What are the themes that you see over and over? And so one of those themes for me was, I love the start. Okay, how could I capitalize on the energy, like you were talking about, Alex, the enthusiasm, the kind of buildup of energy? I love launching. Well, how could I launch myself as part of my system? How could I regularize the launch and just bake it into the system? Then the discipline part of it actually just becomes part of my system. That's actually just executing the system. But because the system is based on, to your point, I love that self-aware piece and the motivator, the system is starts with the self-awareness and the motivator being baked in. And so then you're just, then it's an upcycle because you're baking in success. Because it's you're not just trying to cookie cutter somebody else's system. You're creating a system that then works for you.
And the one thing I just want to quickly add to that is, and kind of what I have been trying to study on my own is, I think there's this like half, I kind of mentioned this, but this half-life of a motivator, right? When something happens, you get, someone breaks up with you, or let's think of a positive one. Unfortunately, negative.
Yeah, an external asteroid hits you.
Sure. Yes. Well, there's actually, that motivator is not going to last forever. And especially the strength of that motivator. And the more, and that's why I call it like a half-life of motivation, is the more you can do in that first half-life, the more, you know, put something on your calendar that says run tomorrow. Or something that you can just create that system, like you said, or create that discipline while you're in that first half-life of the motivator. That's the greater chance of actually turning that discipline into a system, I think.
And that's where it has to tie back to that identity piece we were talking about, because I think that you can set targets like those three categories we talked about. And those are the three categories that I recommend in the up-level system. But there's targets, and then there's targets, and then there's really good targets, really good targets that pull from a heart space because they're tied to your identity.
Right. Yep. Yep. Yep.
Right. Oh.
I'll give you, I've never talked about this publicly yet, but if I start this new podcast idea that I have, it's all about this whole self-awareness, motivation, discipline thing, and
talking about
successful people and how they approach it and everything. So it's kind
you're
of
going to be a wild success with that, because
I hope so.
It's system on the self-awareness that you've already baked into what fires you up. So
I hope so. It all started with me in the hospital too. That was my half life. I got to a doc as quickly as possible. I said, write everything you can, like right after I was in the hospital, like use that as the motivator and everything. So it was nothing bad. It was just me passing out of the finish line.
I was going to say, I hope you weren't in the hospital for anything terrible.
Or we don't have to talk about that. That was another time. Now that's a big deal. So I was in there for 4 days, passed out the finish line. Electrolytes were all wonky and everything like that. So I learned that I actually do push myself 110%, and I need to back down to 90% because I'm not 18 anymore. Is the lesson. A few questions that I tend to ask at the end. If you had to teach something to other marketers, what would it be?
Keep listening. Keep asking yourself, what do they really need?
That was a full circle comment right there. That was good.
Yeah. Keep asking. I don't know. That is the secret to adapting to the ever-changing marketplace, to your client base, to really being in touch with what's going on, because all the tools and tactics, look at marketing. I mean, AI is coming on like a freight train. It's changing everything overnight. But at the end of the day, you know, one of the things I see with AI, if I say, well, what do my clients really need? Well, one of the things they need to realize is that AI is a rabbit hole, just like any other. It's a tool. It's a tool. So how can I help them understand the value of that tool? How can I help them harness the value of that tool? How can we help harness the value of that tool for them, but not make them think that the trees have now become the forest?
As much as I would love to dive into AI, I know we're towards the end. Damn, next time. earlier I asked you, you know, if a client asks you, can you do this and something you don't provide, how do you typically handle that? And you kind of answer that in spades. I'm going to turn that question around and say, you know, how can you guys work with other marketing agencies, or what services can you partner with other agencies? So in other words, you know, what do agencies tend to reach out to you for?
Yeah, no, that's a really great question. So we work with other partner agencies that are really good at a tool or a tactic, but don't really do this assessment piece as well, where they're really approaching the branding and the core essence of this brand. Like, what are the pillars? Who is the target market? The identity piece. Right. And they just want to build a great website. But to build a great website, you have to have these identity pieces nailed. Our system is really good at getting to the heart of the identity, the essence of the client, and helping translate that in language, right? So that you can take it and turn it into great deliverables. So we love partnering with people who Shopify Plus partners, perfect example. They just want to build a great e-com platform. They don't want to back up the truck and get to the essence, right? Get to the identity piece. Amazon partners, same thing. Like, they want to focus on Amazon, you know, e-com fulfillment cycles. They don't want to focus on the copy for the emails that glues it all together, right? And on the back end, that's where we do great in those kind of partnership situations, because that's not the tech that we excel at, right? Those larger brand e-commerce platform, that's not going to be our lane. And so I love to partner with agencies where that is their lane, but then maybe we can help them with more clarity on the identity, the footprint of the client to begin with, to make sure that the platforms that we're building for them are really hitting the mark.
And of course, you know, we ask that question so we can start to spark this and get you referrals.
Yeah, like I love that.
Last question, maybe my favorite question, any book, podcast, or newsletter recommendations? And that can be in marketing. It doesn't have to be. It can be business. It doesn't have to be anything.
Yeah, that's awesome. Books. I just climbed onto Dan Sullivan's stuff, you know, 10X is easier than 2X, who, not how. I think that some of the questions that those are raising for me in book form are just really great questions. I do think that the quality of our lives, our quality of our agencies, is determined by the quality of our questions.
Oh, that was a good quote.
And I do think that any podcast, book, newsletter that challenges you to ask a different set of questions, you are bound to get a different set of answers. And that does take you out of your comfort zone. And that is good for your growth.
Which is really about self-awareness, which I want to talk about. I'm just kidding. Okay. Yeah.
That's awesome.
But as we come up to the end of the episode, I just want to give you an opportunity to mention how people can find you and anything else you'd like to end with.
Yeah. Thank you so much. People can find me at diamond-group.co. I am easily reachable there by email, Teresa, T-H-E-R-E-S-A at diamond-group.co. My assistant April is also easily reachable, but my sales team, you know, reaching out about partnerships. We love partnerships. We do have a Blue Ocean Strategy. That is a book every agency owner should read, right? You know, I'm reminded of that every day because I'm in a smaller market here in Wilmington, North Carolina. And smaller markets tend to be competitive feeling, right? Because they have a more constricted lead pool. And I find myself quite often going, read this book, because we're not limited by anything, guys. Right? So those are great ways to reach out to me. Just hook up with our URL. There's plenty of paths to find me. I'm on Facebook, YouTube, Instagram, all those things, LinkedIn.
And thank you so much for coming on the show. And for those of you who've learned something new from this episode, please consider giving us a like or a follow so we can continue getting the highest quality guests. And as always, thank you for listening. Teresa, you already know I love this episode and everything. So that was amazing. Thank you so much for coming on.
Amazing episode.
Yeah, thank you so much. And when you launch that new venture, I'm going to get you guys a copy of Up Level. It'll be out next week on Amazon, and I'm going to make sure to hook you up. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
And the next Jumpstart Challenge is in the fall. So maybe come up in the fall, or maybe even at the end of the sprint, you need to start sprinting with me a little bit.
Oh, I'm starting that tomorrow. I'm obsessed with this.
This sprint lasts until June 18th. So you got plenty of time.
Shoot me an email if I forget and don't reach out to you, but I will be doing my own little sprints on my side. I can guarantee.
I love it. You guys rock. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the Masters in Marketing Agency podcast. I hope you got a ton of value out of this episode. And before we go, I just want to thank our sponsors, DevNoodle. DevNoodle provides marketing agencies with the ability to offer their clients unlimited website design, build, and management services with fixed monthly plans. If website design, development, and maintenance is holding your agency back from growing, please reach out to us at devnoodle.com, where we make websites easy for you and easy for your clients. devnoodle.com.